bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
This week on Retronauts, there's no business like snow business, except during 5 p.m. traffic. Then it can go to hell and melt. Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Retronauts. I am your host, anatomically correct snow woman Nadia Oxford. I'm joined by two fellow children of the North, Kat Bailey and Victor Hunter. Kat, hi. I'm so happy to have you on Retronauts for a change. Say hello.
Hello, Nadia. You're the host this time.
Oh, my God. The roles are reversed.
I'm the lovely co-host now.
That's right. And my lovely co-host, Kat Bailey. That sounds so strange. That means you have to have the quip about something weird. That's my role.
Cat's nostalgia pit. Let's go.
Let's go. And Victor Hunter. Yes, we are. We're all of the Axe of the Blood God, aren't we, Victor?
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And used to the cold.
Yes.
I'm weak against fighting, fire, rock, and steel type attacks.
Wait, is ice weak to steel?
It's weak to everything.
Yeah.
It's the worst defensive type.
It's weak to a lot of stuff. Yeah.
It's positioned as a defensive type, except that if you have ice, you basically just give up because you're going to be melted, burnt, punched, broken.
Yeah.
You name it.
Yeah.
I love just thinking about Pokemon weaknesses in that regard. Like some of those mnemonics are just wild. Like, yeah. Have you ever tried to punch a bird as Saturday Morning Breakfast?
Yeah. It's my favorite, role-playing game abstraction. It's the thing that taught me that, like, oh, RPGs are mechanics in an RPG is a metaphor for something. And I think Pokemon type advantages are the perfect encapsulation of that.
Yeah, it's actually really clever with like dark and psychic and bug and all that. But the point is, ice sucks. Everyone kind of hates ice except for us. We are born and raised in cold environs, weren't we, people? I myself am from Toronto, which, okay, is not the coldest region in Canada. I'll give it that because we kind of have a microclimate thanks to the lake. But the further away you get from the lake, the more you're going to just get pounded up the butt by a lot of snow. Victor, where is your snowy nest particular?
Yeah, well, as a fellow Canadian, I grew up in the interior of British Columbia, particularly in Canada's only desert.
Yes.
So we had hot, like Southern California hot summers and cold winters. And it's not like Toronto. It was a dry heat. As opposed to a muggy heat. But then, those winters would be dry and cold.
Yeah, Toronto winters are notoriously humid, and that means it's like, okay, it's 0 degrees outside roughly, but you're going to feel that chill in your bones. I'm kind of nostalgic for it. I like to be hurt by the cold, I suppose.
Yeah, I lived 2 years in Toronto, which means I've experienced about a dozen Toronto winters.
you kind of get a whole bunch at once. Like right now it's raining, you know, good old Christmas rain, just like it had when I was a kid. Boy, howdy.
What I'm learning, I've learned two things. A, that Canada has a desert, and B, that Toronto has microclimates, because I just assumed that it was sort of like New York, actually, and more along those lines than humid, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, it's when I say microclimate, I really mean microclimate. Like the closer you are to the lake, the more you are protected from the cold and especially the snow. Like one thing that recently happened was some parts of America who don't live near Great Lakes, but for some reason were getting snow squalls, and they were freaking out because with a snow squall in Toronto, it's like literally blue sky, 5 minutes later, screaming blizzard. 10 minutes later, blue sky. And that just assumed, oh, I guess not everyone lives by the Great Lakes, which is a very temperamental bodies of water, hence the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Kat, you grew up alongside the lakes like me.
I grew up in the land of ice of snow, Minnesota.
The ice and snow.
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
My weather app tells me that it's 40 degrees, which is downright balmy for this time of year.
Yes.
But it can get down to minus 20 often. And in fact, there was a time when I was in eighth grade when it got down to minus 60. And it was literally not safe to go outside.
Yeah.
I have very strong memories of standing on the corner in a snowbank, watching my bus go as it was trying to get to me. I had my first ever car was this 1994 Ford Sable.
Ooh.
And we lived at the bottom of two steep hills. And during the winter, when my senior year of high school was a really bad snowstorm, a lot of snow, very intense winter. And I literally could not get up that hill. You had to floor it because of all the ice and the snow. So it was wild.
It would get so cold in my hometown that as soon as I started moving in one direction, I couldn't stop and could only travel in right angles. And there were several hidden chests that required extra thought processes.
The Minnesota deep lore, if you're a certain age, like I am, you will recall the great Halloween winter of 1991, wherein the Minnesota Twins won the World Series, and the state of Minnesota celebrated 2 weeks later by dumping literal feet worth of snow.
Wow.
It was quite an amazing moment. I have strong memories of wearing, you know, a snowsuit and a little witch hat as my parents valiantly tried to take me trick-or-treating, so.
Oh, that's so cute. I love that.
Yeah.
God, snowsuits. You don't really see kids in those anymore around here, because I remember putting them on. They were the bane of kindergarten teachers, because they'd have like 30 kids who all needed to be put into snowsuits, and we all looked like, you know, Maggie Simpson when she has that little starfish snowsuit on. Or, I mean, actually, the bit from A Christmas Story is pretty accurate, where he's with the little kid, I can't remember his name, the brother is just like, standing with his arms out and like, I need to pee.
Yeah,
that's winter.
When I was in college, I went to the University of Minnesota, and it's a trap because you tour it during the summer, or you go there in the fall and you look at the fall colors and you're like, this is gorgeous. I love this. This is amazing. And then October hits and the first cold snap arrives and you think, I want to die, especially if the heaters haven't been turned on yet in the dormitories.
Oh, yeah.
And there are these steam tunnels running underneath the campus so you can get inside and stay warm.
Wow.
And I knew those. They were called the gopher holes, so the gopher tunnels, because gophers. And I knew those tunnels like the back of my hand because I went through them a lot while I was working for security on campus. Except you had to get to those tunnels.
Yes.
And those 5 minutes that you were outside were the worst moments of your day. I tell you.
Edmonton has a whole underground network of just if you can avoid being above ground, they'll do whatever they can. There's underground tunnels that lead directly to the mall from all the surrounding areas.
Yeah, I think Toronto has like the biggest underground tunnel network of practically in the world, as far as I know. Like there's the several subway stations are linked, as is the East Center Mall. You can go like underground through all of downtown Toronto practically, but I get lost. So I just go up and freeze my ass off. But one thing I wanted to ask you quickly, Kat, did you have winter in Japan when you were there? Like, how did it compare?
Yes, I went through three different winters in Japan. And the thing that a lot of people don't know maybe about Japan is that it's very tropical. Mm-hmm. And during the winters, you mentioned that Toronto's humid. Tokyo is so humid during the winter.
Can't imagine.
And it doesn't really snow. It snows very rarely. It does snow, though, every so often. Mostly, though, it rains, and the humidity and the cold air penetrates your body in such a way that you want to die. And in your home, you can have space heaters. Japanese people like to go under the little tables, and they have the little blankets, and they basically don't move.
The kotatsu.
They have the warm soup.
Yes.
And when you wake up in the morning, you feel like an ice cube. It's really rough. But in 2008, I went to Hokkaido in February, and I went to the Hokkaido Snow Festival, which, if you can ever go to that, is a real treat. I had the best ramen I've ever had in my life up there. They really know how to do it up in terms of soups in Hokkaido. Yeah. And people create these huge snow sculptures. Nice. Out of video game and anime characters.
Beauty.
And so I was seeing things like Anpan Man, which is this, I don't know if you've ever heard of Anpan Man.
No, I haven't.
It's kind of like a cookie man that you can eat.
Oh, boy.
He's a superhero.
He's the inspiration for One Punch Man. He's like...
Anpan Man
is the most ubiquitous mascot.
Like a bean... Anpan is a bean curd little pastry thing.
Yeah.
And so apparently it's a superhero, but... And they had various Pokemon. There are pictures of me next to, say, a snow Pikachu. It was really awesome. Neat. I loved it so much.
I would definitely like to go. Yeah, Hokkaido winters have always interested me because they seem closest to what we grew up with. Like, whereas Tokyo seems more like it's closer to the monsoon season versus an actual winter.
Maybe Tokyo is actually closer to Toronto in many ways, but it doesn't snow as much.
Yeah,
it's a little Vancouver-like. It's a little Vancouver-like.
I've never experienced Vancouver winter, so I have to try it sometime.
It's also just mostly rainy.
Yeah, so I've heard. Yeah. But in this introduction to our areas of snow that we have lived in, we've kind of learned what makes snowscapes so compelling. You know, you mentioned fun things like the snow sculptures, Kat, or the soup, and the, you know, just trying to stay warm, which Japan is admittedly bad at, apparently. So I thought maybe it'd be fun to just kind of talk about our favorite retro snowscapes in retro gaming. And these can be, you know, I was thinking at first, kind of relaxing. We have a lot of those that we can talk about, but also just ones that are memorable and stick out in our minds and why and what makes them so, you know, nostalgic to us or important to us. And, who wants to start? I have a list, but I don't know if you guys have lists, but I have a list.
I'll start maybe by talking a little bit about what makes snowscapes in video games so evocative.
Mm-hmm. Please.
So they're one of my favorite locations in a video game. And it's no surprise that Skyrim is my favorite one because you basically spend a lot of time in snowscapes when you're ascending the mountain for the first time. That's a really memorable sequence. I remember there's a sort of a snowstorm picks up. You are looking up at the top of a very tall peak, and there's a dragon waiting for you, and you're wading through the snow, and you're looking down. And I think that's the moment that solidified Skyrim for a lot of people. But when I think of snowscapes in video games, I think of deep snow. I think of pristine environments. I think of pine trees. I think of tinkling pianos. I think of fighting evil snowmen for some reason, or yetis.
Or Santa, or Secret of Mana.
Santa's in there, maybe.
You beat the shit out of Santa.
And I think of sliding across ice. Mm-hmm. I think of getting frozen. I think of freezing attacks.
Yes.
Ice caves, mountains, and like all things. Oh, it was sledding.
Sledding, of course.
Yeah, mini games.
If you're Canadian.
Or in the case of Final Fantasy VII, snowboarding.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't have snowboarding in Rebirth. How dare.
I'm actually mad about
that. One mini game I wanted.
Yeah, I'm
It's under construction. It shows it right there. It's in the gold saucer. It's under construction.
So we'll see it in disc 3 or part 3, as it were.
Yeah.
I'm looking
forward
to it.
Maybe someday.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think it can be in the right hands, it can be really good. Pet peeve. And I think this was a thing in Final Fantasy X. When the characters don't change clothes and they're all still wearing their island clothes or short sleeves, but they're at the top of a mountain.
And they're fine. Like,
you're literally dying. I love a good snow costume for a character, especially if they're wearing a big fluffy scarf.
You're going to love Endwalker whenever you get to it.
Ooh. There is actually a scene quite like the one you mentioned, Kat, where everyone's all dressed up and bundled up. And that is in Mega Man Legends 2, when you go to Kalinka Island, also the town of Yosuke, I think it's called, but it's basically a big polygonal town, because of course it's Mega Man Legends 2, and it's just so cozy and yet dire, because there's like this really creepy moment where this adventurer who was thought to be lost, but she returned. She found her own grave that they put up as a memorial, thinking she wasn't coming back. She's like, wow, it's really weird to look down at your own grave. And of course, as this is going on, it's snowing. It's just like a really cozy, as I say, cozy yet dire, because Rojas has this beautiful fluffy pink jacket and she's worried about her father being dead. So yeah, good times. I love Legends 2 so much.
How cozy.
How cozy.
There's sort of two directions you can take if you're designing a video game, a snowy town in a video game, because you either use it as shorthand for like cozy, holiday themed community where everyone's drinking hot soup and hot chocolate, or you use it as the, like, this is the barren wasteland that we have to survive, and only the strong make it here. That's like the that's a bit of the Garlemald or the in Golden Sun, it's where Satyros and Minardi are from. There's like there's the northern landscape, or what was the other one I was just thinking? Oh, Valkyria Chronicles 4.
Yes.
You know, the empires love being snowy. Because
they love being
empires,
Russian.
Empires are lands of survival of the fittest. So what better way to showcase that than oppressive weather?
Yes.
It can also be the land of the dead in Warcraft 3, for example. The undead all came from, in the lore of Warcraft, the Lich King, the original Lich King, is sent in a frozen block of ice into the far northern locations of, I think it's Northrend, and builds up the necropolises and enslaves the spider people, and then eventually invades Azeroth, but it's safely out of view because it's like the North Pole, basically. So.
Yeah. Where's our presence this year? Ah!
Oh God, it's spiders. No.
I didn't ask for spiders.
Mom! Santa gave me spiders again.
Again? What did I tell you? About smoking. Oh, gracious. It's funny, one of my favorite, absolute favorite, and most accurate snowscapes is from a 16-bit game, and that is Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah.
The Barrel Blast level is on Gorilla Glacier, which is a whole snow area, and it has this gray sky that is absolutely perfect for what you see before a snowstorm. You see the snow kind of rolling in from the background. And when you finally get to the part you're supposed to do, like, all the fancy stuff with the shooting back and forth with the cannons, you are obstructed by this snowstorm. And just something about the music, first of all, because David Wise is brilliant, is absolutely perfect for a snowstorm.
Yeah.
And just that kind of the way that your vision is obstructed by these beautiful flakes, but are still a pain in your ass because they're getting in the way of everything. And there are a lot of snowstorms like that, specifically in Toronto, where you're kind of on the edge of freezing and rain. So you get those very big, heavy snowflakes that are just gorgeous, but just completely soak you through. And that's exactly what the snow is evocative of in Donkey Kong Country to me.
Yeah, it's incredible. The weather effects in that game are fantastic. And then, like, when you get to the end of a stage and then it clears up, too. I love when they do that in Donkey Kong Country.
That's right.
And then Donkey Kong Country 3 is Canada, the Donkey Kong game.
It is.
So there's, I mean, it's got some great, great snowy levels. That's the one with the snowman boss fight, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And you're right, because that whole area, like, I know some people didn't like Donkey Kong Country 3 so much because it wasn't really the tropical theme. It had the Northern Kremlin. What was it called? Cremosphere.
Northern Cremosphere.
And it was very wilderness, Northern Canadian wilderness sort of setting.
It's beautiful.
It was gorgeous.
It's a gorgeous game.
And I do love the original soundtrack as much as I love David Wise. Like, I loved what they did with that one in particular.
Yeah. And speaking of, I mean, we've already talked a lot about Toronto, but speaking of games that are just set in Canada, we can't not talk about Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, of course.
What a great opening level. I actually wrote an essay, I think, about the opening level, which is set in Toronto, and there's ice and snow, and you're beating everybody up, and that has that great opening soundtrack. Gosh, I can't believe Scott Pilgrim is already retro.
Yep.
And you can tell that the first three levels in that game get the most love.
Yeah.
They ran out of time. They had to get that game out the door. So the last couple levels aren't amazing. But you do go back to that first level a lot because it's River City Ransom, right? So you have to repay Scott's video fees. It's a great location for grinding.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the shops are there. So you end up returning to that area a lot, and it works pretty well. It also has one of my favorite boss fights in that game, which is Matthew Patel.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Pilgrim.
And his demon hipster chicks.
The artist for Scott Pilgrim, if I recall, was Paul Robertson, I think. And he is just one of the most brilliant sprite artists of all time. Like, my dream is to have a game animated by him. And he is from Australia, as I recall. But he perfectly encapsulated, or captured, rather, what the Toronto winters were like for me. I have to admit, it actually makes me a little nostalgic because I'm not saying we never get snow anymore, of course. But when I was a kid, it was much more common for you would go out. It'd be dark because, of course, it gets dark at like 2 p.m. But you'd be out with your friends and you're all kind of standing around huddled for warmth and people are packed in the coffee shops and there's just like snowbanks everywhere and, you know, cars going through the slush. It was just perfectly, perfectly done. And it's, as you say, it deserves its place in this whatever the hell we're making here.
The original movie, Scott Pilgrim, it's filmed in Toronto.
Yes.
And it really made me think a lot of Minneapolis. The styles of the houses, when they're out shopping and they're in the record shops, a lot of that is very South Minneapolis in my recollections of that particular area, except there's a castle as well.
Castle-loma.
Because it's Canada. Castle-loma.
That's Canada for you. You're thinking, this is a lot like the United States. Oh, wait, there's Parliament and a castle and random British stuff, and they like the Queen. Okay.
And we also have our own weird stuff going on.
Maple cookies.
And that Anamanaguchi soundtrack is just incredible.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, my God. Anamanaguchi was in town like 2 years ago, and I don't remember the exact circumstances that I couldn't go. I think it was COVID-related, but I was so mad because multiple of my friends went, and they had special prints. And, of course, I love that soundtrack, and hearing it live and in person.
Man.
Yeah, that was the last concert I went to before COVID hit. I remember I ran into a bunch of friends there. We were all going, hey, you hear about this disease?
How about this virus that's going around? Sure the authorities will stop it before it gets to be a problem.
Be
I literally
fine.
Thought that to myself.
I did get to see a live and in-person screening of the Scott Pilgrim movie in maybe 2011. It was a long time ago. And Edgar Wright was there.
Cool.
And
that's awesome.
He was accepting Q&As. And before the start of each movie, he asked people, he went through the IMDb tags and picked one. And then you had to clap every time one happened. And for Scott Pilgrim, it was coins. And for Hot Fuzz, it was the stake through the chin. So everybody, that's like the grossest moment in that entire movie. And everybody went, woo!
Of course. Yeah, I was actually recently at Casa Loma because they had a Halloween thing going on. It was actually pretty good. But every time I go there, I look down the railings and like think about the idiot trying to skate down them. And
how
saying,
could
those
you
are,
not?
Like, the crappiest railings in the world. And it'll be fine. Explodes. One thing I want to bring up that I think we'll all agree on here is the Yeti Mansion from Twilight Princess, which is, first of all, one of the better Zelda dungeons, I think. Even though I am not a fan of sliding ice puzzles, the aesthetic and just the different feel of being in a mansion versus like a hole in the ground, like you usually are for Zelda.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
It was perfect.
It's perfect. Recontextualizing a residential space to be a dungeon is brilliant. It's always brilliant. It always works great.
It's always ethically correct.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I like about the Yeti Mansion is the first several dungeons in Twilight Princess are very stock Zelda dungeons to the point where you're going, okay, yeah, I've been here or done that. You don't even know you're in a dungeon in Twilight, in the snow, in the Yeti Temple. You think, I recall there's a sliding, you're sliding down a hill or something like that. You find the Yeti Mansion.
And your frozen leaf.
So already just the entrance is memorable. And you think, oh, I have to complete this in order to get to the dungeon.
Yeah.
And you're helping this Yeti make this delicious soup. And if I recall correctly, you're gathering up ingredients. and you're starting to explore. And the moment where you get the mace, the big swinging mace, which, by the way, is a great Zelda weapon. It was very different from a lot of the other weapons, that stuff very that you helpful. Got in Twilight Princess. It didn't feel contrived, like the thing that you're jumping on the walls.
Oh, I like the spinner. I like the spinner.
Fun. You like the spinner?
Okay. Spinner's fun.
I liked the mace. It was a fun weapon. The enemy that you were fighting really leaned into the combat mechanics with that one.
Yes.
And that's the moment where you go, that's a mini boss. I got a new power. This is a dungeon.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Really, really good.
You don't really realize at first that it's a traditional dungeon. And even the quest that you're doing where you're getting the ingredients for the Yeti because his wife is sick. And it's, you know, being sick, if you live in a cold environment, that is kind of par for the course. Like, I just look at my watch, say, oh, it's January, here comes the flu, even though I got my shot, it doesn't matter. So eating hot soup, of course, is something that I'm extremely familiar with when I'm sick. I actually have I take like chicken stock and I just load it up with garlic and hot sauce. And, you know, that it just kind of reminds me of that. You can be cozy when you're sick, as long as you're not feverish and want to kill yourself.
It's just a dungeon about a guy who loves his wife.
It is. It's a Valentine's.
Big wife guy that Yeti.
If we can't all identify with that, then I don't know what there is out there for us, you know?
I agree.
When I played that dungeon for the first time, I actually was sick. It was early 2007. I was living in Japan at that time. Twilight Princess had just come out. And my partner, Emily, and I were taking turns playing it. Because I would have to leave the room while she played because we didn't want to spoil one another on it. And we 100%ed that game. Each one of us 100%ed that game, had just an incredible time with it. But I was sick at one point when I was playing that specific dungeon, and it was so warm and so cozy and evocative. Mm-hmm. And it really was a perfect antidote for the Japanese winter, because I was also curled up under a blanket while I was playing it.
Yeah.
Sure.
One of those moments where video game intrudes on real life.
Wow. Art imitating life, imitating art. Truly.
How about that? Victor, have you played Earthbound? I can't remember.
I have started Earthbound a dozen times. I've started Mother 3 a dozen times. It's a blind spot that I will correct someday.
I understand. Kat, you haven't played it yet, right? Have you?
Not really, no. Actually, when I was flying home from LA, I was watching my friend Jada play Earthbound, but Earthbound is a little bit of a blind spot for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely a fan. I think Eric is going to be playing it on the Blood God stream soon enough. But there is a area in Earthbound called Winters. And I love this area because, first of all, I won't really spoil anything, but the structure of Earthbound's story sends you to Winters during a very tense time in the story. And it kind of shifts the narrative for a little while to Jeff, who has to work backwards and rescue his friends. And you start off in a boarding house, and it just, you have like the fireplace going there. The boys are all kind of hanging out before they go to bed. It's all very nice and cozy. And Jeff is there, and he is summoned telepathically to help. And so he has to leave, which is a very kind of like leaving a warm blanket to go out into the wilderness. He doesn't know what's going on. He just knows he's compelled to do it. Actually, to get out, he uses his friend, who is named Tony, and is canonically gay. And that was something that was very not much done in 90s games. But Itoi said, like, he's in love with Jeff, which is very cute. But anyway, you go out from this nice, cozy area, which has a very soft remix of Snowman, which is a theme that appears in all of the Mother games. And is usually, if you heard it in Smash, you probably are familiar with it. But he goes out into the wilderness, and it's cold, and it's weird. And there are cavemen who are the primary enemy. I don't know why. But yeah, when you get out into the world, the music and the tone shift from that dark, soft kind of atmosphere to a more jingly, festive atmosphere where people who look like Fred Flintstone are walking around because it's Earthbound. And he works backwards from there to where his friends are trapped, and it's a long journey. And he meets his father, Dr. Andonuts, who's also in Mother 3. And Dr. Andonuts doesn't really know his son very well. He's like, I kind of shipped you off to boarding school. How you doing? So that's kind of awkward. But yeah, it's a great part of the game. I'm excited to see Eric get there if he does. Hopefully he sticks to it.
Nadia, you mentioned something earlier, and I had several traumatic flashbacks.
Oh, dear. Actually.
Oh, no. So you mentioned sliding box puzzles.
Yeah.
Which is definitely one of my least favorite things in a snow or winter video game, where you walk into a room and you see some boxes and they're all set up and you start pushing them. And you have to get them onto a Switch or something.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly, this is one maybe in the Frozen Palace or the Winter Palace in A Link to the Past, among
Ocarina
other things.
Ocarina of Time had it infamously in the little area where you fight the Winter Wolfos and get the Iron Boots, I think.
It is the cousin of the box puzzle.
Yeah.
Which, when I'm the queen of video games, I will ban
all
box puzzles forever.
No!
Victor gets exiled because he fights.
Sokoban is a rich part of our history.
That's true. You would have to banish Parrish as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, Parrish. You're being banned into the banished into the Nether Realm.
Being thrown from your own production.
Sending you to Northrend with the spiders.
I'm assuming you haven't played Void Stranger then.
I haven't.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
I can understand that for various people, it makes their brain go burr as they're watching all of the boxes slide around. But for me personally, I find it pretty contrived, and I like a more diegetic approach to video games. So,
what's more diegetic than slipping on ice?
Oh God, kill me! That's
There's
the one thing
you can
I
do
hate
that.
About winter.
Actually, my favorite. Feeling when they talk about game feels sometime in Red Dead Redemption 2, which is not retro, but it's getting there.
Yeah, God, we're
the opening
there.
Sequence has you walking through waist high snow with a lantern,
yes,
in the middle of a driving blizzard, and instantaneously, I felt that snow, I felt that winter, I felt that blizzard. And that is what I look for in winter. Not necessarily slipping, but walking through snow. I like snow, not necessarily ice.
Bah. Immersion. Bah. Bah. A filthy word.
I think that the chill penguin level in Mega Man X is an all-timer. And
very good.
One of the reasons for that is the moment where you enter that icy cave. And it was a really cool graphical effect for the time.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if we had slip mechanics going on. I know we did for the boss fight. Chill Penguin had that little thingy on his ceiling, the hook that he would pull and make a snowstorm. And that looked really good for the 16-bit era.
Great music, too.
Oh,
great, great music. And it's memorable because it's always the level you play first.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Unless you're playing Maverick Hunter X, they screw you up on that one.
Sure, yes.
Really? What happens?
Yeah. They move the power-ups,
move the
for
boots.
One thing.
Yeah.
It's very much a remix kind of game. I loved it. I would love to see it on somewhere that's not a dead system, but what do I know?
I was so looking forward to all the other powered-up versions we were going to get. I was so sure we were going to get two through six.
I would have
six.
Loved Mega Man 2 powered up. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. Man. Boo.
I love that Chill Penguin's level has impacts beyond it, that it freezes Flame Mammoth's
yes.
level.
Yeah.
That is
very
so cool.
Very cool. You always have to wonder, okay, does snow beat fire or does fire beat snow?
That's always
in
a question.
This instance, because you think to yourself, does Chill Penguin freeze Flame Mammoth or do you use something else on him?
You can use Flame Mammoth's weapon and he lights up like a firecracker. It's actually funny.
Right.
That is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, what? It's actually very similar to the Yoga Flame effect.
What cuts off his trunk? Isn't there a trunk?
His trunk
off?
Is cut off by Rolling Cutter.
Oh, the Boomer Kwanger.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
It's kind of a precursor to one that I was going to bring up was Mega Man 04 with the weather effects in there.
Yes.
They sort of function as your normal or hard difficulty. You have the ability to alter the weather, and there are some stages that you can just make easier because snow will pack on the spikes, so you
yes.
can freely walk over them. I love 04's weather stuff is very, very fun.
04 is a great game, but incredible they did the game. Same thing with Mega Man 7,
mm-hmm.
where I can't remember what you would do, but you could cause snow, I think, in Cloud Man stage, and that would reveal hidden platforms that were otherwise
right.
kind of tricky to see. So I like that effect.
Is Chill Penguin the single best Mega Man ice stage of them all?
Could be. It's been so long since I played like
it's
all
the original Iceman stage in the original Mega Man. Okay, so I was never a big fan of the disappearing blocks.
No, they suck.
Puzzle.
Mm-hmm. They suck ass.
Very stressful, and Iceman stage has a lot of them, actually. Mm-hmm. Multiple of them, I think, over spikes or pits.
Yes.
And there's a lot of ice in it, so not the biggest fan of that one. But Chill Penguin is great because you don't have to deal with any of that. Mega Man X blessedly gets rid of all of them.
Yeah.
And you get a giant mech suit that you can punch through igloos with.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But Mega Man X4 also has a really nice ice stage where you have two parts where you have a snowstorm. And then the second part, you're more in an ice cavern. And there's an enemy that will come out like a little bird that will fly over and freeze everything. It's a really neat effect. Mm. Frost Walrus.
Yeah.
He's also fun because he's so big and can kick his ass pretty easily. He's usually the first one you go for, as I recall.
Yeah.
I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about the snowball fight in Final Fantasy Tactics Advance.
Mm.
Brilliant.
Good point.
Brilliant.
Which to me, I think a good tutorial is hard to do.
Yes.
Because they're so often really boring. They are, again, contrived.
Mm-hmm.
And really take you out of the experience. Final Fantasy Tactics Advance teaches you the mechanics of a tactics game with a snowball fight, which accomplishes multiple things. One, it teaches you how to play the game.
Yes.
Two, it introduces all of the characters. Three, it looks really pretty. And four, it has a storytelling beat to it
mm-hmm.
and really puts you into the world. So it's an instantly compelling sequence. It's a fun, low stakes way to learn how to play the game. And also, it kind of, when you think of snow, like sometimes I think of maybe Frozen or maybe a little bit of a fairy tale aspect to it. And Final Fantasy Tactics Advance has a huge fairy tale component to it because all of the characters basically get pulled into a fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think establishing it in the snowy streets and having them have a snowball fight is perfect.
And
that
it's in the schoolyard. Like it's just so sweet and perfect and nostalgic in all the right ways. And it has so much, like you say, it's got unique pixel art that you don't see anywhere else. Yeah, it's incredible.
It's the only inaccuracy is that I don't know about any of your schools, Victor, but my schools banned snowball fights because kids were like, you know, they put rocks and ice and shit
yeah.
in snowballs.
Yeah,
ruin it for everyone.
Totally.
Didn't stop us. Don't get me wrong. But the teachers would have come up and broken up that tutorial session pretty quickly.
Yeah.
We always struggled with snowball fights because the ice wouldn't Well, the snow wouldn't pack properly. It was
maybe it was
a little too powdery.
Yeah.
Maybe during the – once you got to January, February, it would start to get kind of slushy.
It starts to thaw. It'd
pack a bit better.
Yeah.
But it was also full of dirt and mud and mast.
And that's why we don't have snowball fights.
That was always the worst. In November, December, it would start snowing in Minnesota. You'd be like, wow, gorgeous. And then by February, March, you're thinking to yourself, please get me out of this. I can't deal with this anymore. Please, no more snow. Not one more.
If you're a Canadian, you tend to run away to Cuba for a while. That's the Canadian thing to do.
Right.
Snowbirds. A lot of Minnesotans have houses in Florida or Arizona.
Yeah. A lot of Canadians go to Florida, but I haven't heard about Arizona being a popular spot for us. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but
yeah, I think on the West Coast, I know my parents and some friends are partial to Arizona.
Oh, really? I guess it could be a West Coast thing. It makes sense.
Yeah.
The first time Emily ever went to San Francisco, she went for a work trip. And it was the middle of February, and it was freezing cold. It was below zero. I wanted to die. And she came back looking brisk and refreshed. She was like, I was wearing shorts.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have a jacket. People were looking at me like I was crazy. I thought it was gorgeous. We have to live there. Friends, I did live in February. And fun fact, February, from a weather standpoint, is often one of the best times of year in San Francisco, because the marine layer goes away and it's weirdly very sunny and warm, and the rest of the country is totally miserable.
Yeah, but I'm like, is the worst.
Microclimates.
Wow. Okay, enough of this cozy BS. The cold is oppressive and miserable and a reminder of the worst times in our life. That's why I'm introducing Silent Hill Shattered Memories into the mix.
Oh, yeah,
no snow levels. We're talking snow games. This whole thing is just the horrible life of a very sad teenage girl simulator. In a small town with bad winters. And I think it's incredible. I love that game. It's I know some of the latter Silent Hills get a bad rap, but I really liked when they would just sort of pick, this Silent Hill is cold. This one is rainy. We're just going to run with that theme.
The first one is foggy.
Yeah, I think Shattered Memories is really, really good. And as someone who grew up in a smaller town that got very, very, very snowy, especially when you figure out, there's a point in the game where you discover that, if you're not in the hell version of Silent Hill, there really are no threats. You know, it is an adventure game, essentially, until you get to the escape sequences. And they are so... They capture the uncanniness of early Silent Hills really well. There's just a being in a town and not seeing anyone else on the road and running into maybe one or two other people as you wander the streets is a really cool feeling.
I actually had that feeling in real life during COVID, and it was absolutely terrifying because I live in a Jewish area. It was around Passover, and usually the area is quite packed with, you know, people coming from other places and spending the holidays with their family. They're very busy. People are shopping. And of course, everyone, you know, it's not just Jewish people who live there. Everyone's kind of doing their thing. Easter is usually around that time. Mm-hmm. And I literally stood in the middle of the street and just, you know, nobody. Because I was on my way. There was one store open and I was going to get supplies. It was just a terrifying feeling. And it was cold because it was a very cold April.
Yeah. And then you get the escape sequences. And the way the way they adapted the transformation of Silent Hill into the Hell version for Shattered Memories is gorgeous. The fact that they did it on the Wii is incredible because it's happening in real time and you're seeing things freeze in real time and street lamps are getting twisted and encased in ice and cars are crashing and buildings are getting frozen over. And then you're seeing shapes deep within the ice moving. Ah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
It's brilliant. What a good game. Everyone go out and play Shattered Memories.
Didn't Tom Hewlett work on that one?
That's a Tom Hewlett.
Tom Hewlett. And a friend of ours.
And a Sam Barlow. I love that game.
We, Kat, you, speaking of horror, one of your choices is one of my horrors, which is World 6 and Super Mario Brothers 3, Iceland. Which, if you're playing the Japanese version, it's Iceland. You got to have that D. But did you ever get the Hammer Brothers suit in the Toad House? And I don't mean in the newer versions of Mario 3 where they wuss out and give you a direct path. You had to do some weird flying stuff to get the Hammer Brothers suit in Iceland and Mario 3. And it was my white whale. And I finally did it. But at what cost?
Getting the Hammer suit was so exciting.
It was.
Because it was so rare, it didn't really advertise that it was a thing that it existed.
Mm-hmm.
The Tanuki suit and the tail were the ones that were always the ones that were advertised. I think World 6 is one of the lesser known Mario 3 movie worlds because a lot of people warp whistle, right?
Yes.
So they probably warp. Maybe they do 1, 2, 3. Maybe they did 4.
Some of them do 4.
There's a decent chance that they warp whistled and missed 5 and 6. And for me, 5 in particular, but also 6 are some real highlights of Mario 3. I love the little plants that are frozen.
Yes.
But if you use your fireballs, you can melt them and accidentally release them. They do a lot of fun things with ice blocks in particular. And that is, for me, where Mario 3 really starts getting special. It's also when the gloves come off in terms of the difficulty starting around World 5, where the developers say, okay, you're here. Good luck. And when I play Mario 3, I always make a point of playing through the entire game without using any warps because I think every world is so special. World 7 is the most difficult world in the game. I think maybe more so even than World 8.
I think so too.
When I played it on the Wii, when when it originally came out on Virtual Console, I think I lost 40 or 50 lives in that, in World 7. It was crazy. But World 6 to me is in that sweet spot of all the parts that I love about that game.
World 6 is also the biggest map in the game. So it's a real, endeavor. And the thing I love about Mario 3, above Mario World, I'm sorry, people, is that Mario 3 is so good at its visual storytelling. It does not get any credit for that. The fact that you start World 5 on the ground, and you ascend a tower, and then you're in the sky, that's incredible.
It's perfect.
And in you were talking about how special the hammer suit was, Kat, and specifically there is a level in Iceland where, yes, you have the Toad House where you can get the hammer suit, and to do that, you have to fly holding a shell and throw that and slide under. And it's a real exercise for your fingers. It's not essential by any means, but if you want to be clever, if you want to explore, Mario 3 has you covered. And there, you mentioned you fling the fireballs at the plants and they defrost. There is another hammer suit, and you have to work really quickly at this. And this was another one of my white whales when I was a kid. You hit a P block that's out of range, and then you have to run to the plants that were frozen. And if you were smart, you froze them ahead of time. They turn into coins when the P block is on. And then that allows you entrance to the pipe they are guarding. Otherwise, you can't touch it. And that there is a hammer suit there. And again, wow, what a cool puzzle. And World 7, the imagery there is fantastic. That is where one of my favorite castles is, and that is the coin castle where you hit a P block and holy shit, all these coins, I'm going to collect these. And eventually you start to realize you can collect all the coins you want. You can collect all the lives you want, but you can't get out until you think about it. And this is a castle that is abandoned. There are no enemies other than Boom Boom. And you wonder what happened here. And again, you have to do some fancy flying where you have to get a Tanuki suit. And you have to fly up to the ceiling to find this pipe you're supposed to progress through. But until then, you wonder to yourself, why did they make this castle that has so many coins and you can collect all the coins you want? But unless you start thinking, that's the only way to get out. And then you wonder what happened to everything else that was there. Because you see like the empty stumps of candles. You see the special weird layers where that weird stretchy ghost used to live. Did they all just die trying to collect these coins? Like, is there a message here about the futility of pursuing? There can be. I don't, it's so strange to me that they thought this way, but it's remarkable.
Mario 3 is the last time Bowser actively declared war on the Mushroom Kingdom. And then after that, he went on vacation and just took it easy from that point on.
Had a kid.
Was more of a friendly protagonist, but he brought the army, the air force, the navy. He brought everything.
He has ships, man.
Yeah.
And the seas are blood.
It's World 6 and 7, and honestly 5 as well, where the mini fortresses really start to get special as well. They're really complicated examples of level design. People always, I don't like to talk shit about Mario World in comparison to Mario 3.
Yeah, same.
I think Mario World is really special in different ways, but I don't think it has anything even approaching, and I include the Ghost House in this, the complicated designs of some of the fortresses, especially in World 7.
Yeah, we really went off track, but I really could talk about Mario 3 like all day and all night. I'm ridiculous. Victor, do you like Mario 3?
I like Mario 3 just fine. However, my first console was a Super Nintendo, so I played the crap out of Mario World more than I did 3. I love 3. Yeah.
Respect.
You know, all three of us being RPG fans, I think it would be a huge shame if we did not mention Narsh from Final Fantasy VI.
Absolutely.
Because to this day, I don't know if Narsh is in a mountain or a valley, but either way, it has a really interesting closed off feeling. And the steam, it works really, really well with all the steampunk, like steam and pipes stuff going around. And the opening shot of Terra and the soldiers walking towards Narsh as it grows in the distance, that was actually recently used to promote Final Fantasy Collection. Shibuya Station had that scene up on like a wall projected. So it goes to show how incredible, what a feat it was for the Super Nintendo, and the snow blowing around. Again, talking about authentic feeling winter scenes, that's a big one for me.
Yeah, all the chimneys, like either the
steaming,
like the steam coming out of things and the pipes and everything. It's got that feel of like a steampunk Dickensian winter, you know.
Yes.
It feels very but yeah,
steampunk Dickensian winter. I love that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, so I'm a chimney sweep.
But yeah, like you say, that there is that discrepancy when you see them over the ridge, and then you see the lights of the buildings on the opposite side of the valley, which I assume is supposed to be Narsh, but then you don't really experience that. It feels like the actual playable space of Narsh is at the bottom of that valley,
Yes.
Which kind of hits me as someone who grew up in a town that literally exists in the bottom of a valley.
You were in a rain shadow, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah.
We learned about those in geography. Yeah.
Also, the Esper is frozen in ice.
Yeah.
Yes. Tritok or Valley Garmonda if you play Dawn Trail, which you should.
Yeah.
Earlier, Victor was mentioning horror and how and Silent Hill Shattered Memories. And I think winter can be just an incredible horror setting.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Of course, The Thing, one of the iconic horror movies of all time, set in the North Pole. Also, The Shining, the Overlook Hotel.
Yes, that's a really good, really fantastic example. Especially the book. Mm-hmm. You really do feel snowed in when you read that. It's terrifying. Yeah.
The feeling of being isolated and remote and trapped with snow all around you, and it's cold and you cannot get out.
Yeah.
And cold things. Cold symbolizes death.
Yeah.
Warmth symbolizes life. And so the reason I went back to this was because things frozen in ice in mysterious areas, such as the Esper in Final Fantasy VI, that is where cold can be really powerful imagery in fiction.
Yeah,
I agree.
I think of SMT Strange Journey.
Yes.
Yes.
Such a good game.
Yeah, if you want isolation and The Thing inspired, it doesn't get much more isolated than
isolated.
I still think of the first level is one of my favorite in an RPG because that music, it's very commanding and like frightening, and you are in this frozen area. Kat, you mentioned things frozen in ice, and that's always a oh my god moment, because something frozen in ice, if you release it, it might help you and it might kill you. You don't know, except in the context of the game. But even then, it can be kind of dicey.
Or you can get to the treasure.
You know what?
The long last, yay!
You know what will help you that's frozen in ice?
Mm-hmm.
The cheerleaders of Owendon 2 at the end of part one of the finale. Okay. So Owendon 1, right? Your final level. This is everyone's favorite rhythm series, Owendon and Elite Beat Agents. DS games, super, super great. All licensed pop songs out of those crunchy DS speakers. Some of them are really bad covers sung by the guy who did the Pokemon theme song.
I didn't even know that.
No way, really?
Yeah.
Bless him.
But I love these games, and they all have incredible climaxes. They're just fantastic. First one. Owendon, you play as a group of Japanese male cheerleaders, you can unlock the female characters for the very hard mode. But it's through cheering that you stoke the fighting spirits of the people around you to help them solve their problems. Now, a big problem in the first one is that there's a meteor hurtling towards Earth, but you cheer hard enough that the meteor is calamity is averted. Elite Beat Agents, there's an alien invasion. You cheer everyone on enough. And the aliens ban music.
Yeah. No music, but Jumpin' Jack Flash.
It's a big old Footloose scenario.
Yeah.
However, Owendon 2, part one of the finale, is that the sun is dying.
Oh, no. Let's cheer it back to life.
Yeah. What's more scary than the heat death of the universe? Yes, the sun has cooled down. The world is freezing. Everyone, you are to the tune of Countdown by Hyde. A pretty good song. Some really classic 2000s J-rock.
Oh, yeah. That's what you need.
And of course, the Owendon team, there's ice raining from the sky, and to protect the people of their town, the Owendon team jumps in the way, and they are hit by the ice, and part one ends with them frozen. Solid.
Oh, no.
Then part two kicks in, and all of the people that you have helped along the way, they are the ones who will revive the Owendon with their fighting spirit that the Owendon gave them. And They cheer hard enough that Sekai wa Sore wo Aito yo Bundaze by Sambo Master begins playing, and they are freed from their ice, and together the fighting spirit of the people of first Japan and then the entire planet Earth is enough to reignite the sun.
Hell yeah.
And it's incredible.
And then it goes supernova. Oh no, too much. My grandpa's too strong.
Yeah. It's incredible.
That's pretty cool.
The song choices are great. I am also a fan of the Jumpin' Jack Flash and Elite Beat Agents.
Jack Flash.
But yeah.
If you want to talk about Elite Beat Agents, because of course you do, the Christmas you're the inspiration. I was once in a bookstore and I heard that song. I started crying. It was ridiculous because of that scenario where her daddy's dead. And does he come back to life? I'm not sure what happens if you do.
No, it's that if you do well enough, then his spirit. Oh, God, I'm going to cry thinking about it.
Oh, it is sad.
If you beat the level. His spirit finally gets to deliver her the Christmas present he couldn't before he died. Oh, God.
But if you screw it up, it's funny.
Yeah.
Actually, there's one part of that that's really sad that actually isn't funny, where you know how you do those little beats where you're doing the motions and there's a cinema kind of playing in the background.
Yeah.
And there's one where she's running after her father. And if you do well, like, he turns to look at her. And if you screw it up, he walks away and doesn't look at her. And she starts crying. And I'm like, oh, God, that's terrible. I can't handle that.
Because all of the games have one song that is, like, the emotional one.
Yes.
And I believe the one in Wendon 2 is about figure skater sisters.
Oh, nice.
And I think one of the figure skater sisters had died. And it's the other figure skater carrying on her legacy.
Such good games.
These are all ice.
They're all ice.
Christmas
figure
theme.
Skating.
Figure skating. Heat death.
Heat death or figure skating. Take your pick.
I think we're running out of time, but I really wanted to talk about Shadow Moses Island before.
Please do.
I really
feel like we'd be remiss without doing it. I think one of the greatest video game levels or in areas of all time.
Yeah.
Probably top 10. Interconnected, perfectly tied into the setting, set up in Alaska.
Yep.
At one point, Snake gets a cold and is coughing and alerting the guards to his presence.
Yeah.
There are wolves howling. Mm-hmm. One of the great examples of sound design in a video game. I was watching it being played not too long ago, and I was floored by so much of this game. And they really do a great job of using the winter setting and tying it into the actual gameplay mechanics.
Yeah.
For example, in the opening area, after you ascend the elevator and you've seen the high D, and you are trying to get from one side to the other, and there are guards with pineapples and I forget what kind of weapon.
AKs, I think.
AKs and pineapples.
Oh, no, 5.56ers?
Yeah, something like that.
It's your bullet.
Anyway, there are security cameras, and if you are walking, the guards will notice your footprints in the snow and will go and investigate. And frankly, the original Metal Gear Solid still has more advanced stealth mechanics than a lot of modern games that I play to this day.
For sure.
So full credit to that.
Yeah.
Tactical stealth action.
The whole idea of enemies finding your footprints and following them, that was incredible for the time.
Yeah. And the fact that they highlight it by then using your radar screen to show the enemy's viewpoint to see that they are, in fact, looking at your footprints is so much fun. I think that's brilliant. I love it. Also, the colors in that game are just so cold. Everything about that game feels freezing cold.
And the canon ending to me, because I never was able to save Meryl, because it's actually really hard, is Otacon and Snake riding into the sunset on a snowmobile.
Oh, they're totally a couple. They're like like red and blue.
Love.
In Pokemon, which one was the Alola region? Sun and Moon. Yeah. Just
yes. Where they're on vacation together.
On vacation together.
Definitely not an item.
Definitely not gay. Roommates. They're roommates.
I even love, I know a lot of people bag on MGS4. I'm not gonna do that because I think MGS4 kicks ass. But the way it also recontextualizes a lot of stuff in Shadow Moses, I know the cynical take is that it's pandering to nostalgia. But I think it actually does a really, really, really good job of capturing that space and then expanding it in places that are important, like the fight with Crying Wolf it takes place in an area that you an amount of space that you wouldn't have been able to do on the PS1.
Right.
And I think it feels great. I mean, that fight, your mileage may vary with the actual fight itself, but I love it. And then I'm also a big Twin Snakes fan because anytime you give me a familiar space and then give me a bunch of verbs I'm not supposed to have and I get to break that game in half is a good time. Like, Twin Snakes is not a replacement for Metal Gear Solid. It is a companion piece. It is supplementary material.
It's a companion piece.
I learned relatively recently that Hideo Kojima used Legos.
Right.
To design the levels
of
Shadow Moses Island and Metal Gear Solid. So you would build these rooms, and then he would take a little mini camera and fly it in. And that was how he showed the designers and the level artists how the camera was supposed to work when Snake was pressed up against a wall and such. And I thought that was really ingenious.
Yeah.
That is ingenious.
People like to rag on Hideo Kojima, but I loved seeing that in action specifically with that old home video footage in the late 90s.
Oh, man. Good stuff.
If you can get your hands on it, the document of Metal Gear Solid 2, the PS2 game, quote unquote, that is just, it's a companion piece to MGS2 that has all the scripts in it and a bunch of, it's just like an interactive documentary all about Metal Gear Solid that is incredible.
Yeah, we have been talking so much about cold and snow that now I am cold. So I am ready to kick it off and drink some hot soup. I don't know about the rest of you. But
can I squeeze one more in real quick?
Just one more.
Just real quick. Just because I need to.
Good for you.
JRPGs are very, very good at the snowy places and the snowy towns. They've always got cozy villages. I think I want to shout out one especially, Flanor in Tales of Symphonia, because it is also kind of where the emotional core of the game is. It is sort of the biggest emotional character beats all happen there. It's sort of, Flanor is like the lead up to that game's first ending. But also it is where you sort of discover that the game has been keeping track of your affinity with your party members, and your top three characters in your party that have the highest affinity with you will approach Lloyd and ask him if he wants to go for a walk. And that you can turn away characters. And if you turn away enough, you will get a default character. But it shows who you've got affinity with, and then that character sort of becomes your soulmate for the rest of the game. And it can be anyone in your party, and it gives you special dialogue for the rest of the game. It unlocks certain items. It's really, really lovely.
That's nice.
But also, that means that it has the same arc as Sakura Wars.
I knew this was going to get to Sakura Wars somehow. We almost had an episode.
That keeps track of your party member's affinity, and then at a climactic point in the game, the top characters give you the option to go on a date with them, and that character becomes your soulmate. Also, both games character designs by Kosuke Fujishima. It's almost like Sakura Wars is an incredibly influential JRPG that should be in everyone's lexicon.
It could be. We
head to patreon.com/bloodgodpod.
The Pantheon.
Yeah.
Well, the Axe of Blood God's leaking into this podcast.
Don't worry, I have a whole thing set up to make sure that we get our promotion, but I guess I'll get one more then, because I have to mention Final Fantasy VII. We talked about the snowboarding, but when you climb that crater after the certain event that happens, that is a very, very steep fall from the climax in a very emotional way. And you have to keep warm as you climb. And I heard it was actually really hard in the Japanese version. They made it easier for the English version. But you crest that crater and see the storm that Sephiroth is causing because he's a dick. But there's also a town there, and it's a snowy town because it's at the top of this crater. And Final Fantasy VII has all these fixed camera angles, and you can only see this town like from head on. And as you move deeper into the town, cloud gets smaller and smaller. And when you start on the hillside of this town and you see kids tobogganing, like they're just kind of going down. Well, in Canada, we have like crazy carpets. You ever have a crazy carpet, Victor?
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
I had a GT snow racer.
Oh, I had that too. And I had a counterfeit GT snow racer that I went down the some ice in. That went really well. I fucked up my arm so badly. Oh, but I love that town because you see the kids tobogganing and they're having fun. And even despite the fact Shinra is after you and they're kind of occupying the town, but they're still tobogganing. And you can see the sun. And this is what gets me about this level. You can see the sun just barely cresting the trees. Mm-hmm. And it has a very winter afternoon look to the light. And Final Fantasy VII Vanilla, I mean, the remake is very good at atmosphere as well, but Final Fantasy VII Vanilla, the atmosphere is just unbeatable. And that really captured not just the, you know, what it's like to live in a snowy town during winter, but also the light. The lighting is very unique, very watery in wintertime. And they did that very well.
Oh, and just the sheer number of mechanics they add when you fall, after you fall and you have to navigate that map that is turning and the snow is blowing and you have to set waypoints.
I never find Alexander.
To keep going in the right direction. And then it connects to this larger map of little nodes of areas.
Yes.
And then, like the keeping yourself warm and the, you know, failing anything and then ending up back at the hut. There's a lot of good stuff there.
There is. Yeah. Like I said, I don't get it. I never got Alexander, but
yeah.
Maybe Sunday. Yeah. This has been a really cool episode, so to speak. Thank you guys so much for joining
cool.
us.
Hey,
joining me. Yeah. But that will be it for now. So I want you all to bundle up and enjoy your holiday, preferably with your loved ones. But if you want to celebrate with your demons, you can celebrate with the demons. I won't judge. If you like what Retronauts does, please support us at patreon.com/retronauts. For $3 a month, you get episodes a week early and ad-free, and I think at a higher bitrate than the free shows as well, so that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. For Nintendo Ultra $64 a month, you get the chance to set the topic of the show once every 6 months. And for a cool hundo, you get the opportunity to guest on a segment of Retronauts every 4 months that you're part of this tier. Holy moly. I think someone did this once and asked me to cover Radiant Historia, which is actually going our game of the month for the Pantheon over at Blood God, which you can find us at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. We cover RPGs old and new, Eastern and Western. We stream live at 9 a.m. PT slash 12 p.m. ET every Saturday on Twitch at Blood God Pod. Yeah. We have some pretty incredible stuff coming in 2025, so y'all better pay attention to us. I'll find you if you don't. Like, I absolutely will. I have nothing else to do. Until then, until you see me, may your winter days be filled with soft, fluffy snow and not the slushy, awful crap that piles up beside the curb.